Welcome to the Love Cars on the Grid podcast, your global motorsport roundup with me, Tiffany Dell, and Paul Woodman.
Well, welcome to Love Cars on the Grid, your global motorsport podcast, where we look back on a weekend packed full of all sorts of racing from around the world, and whether it's on two wheels or four wheels in Australia, Portugal, or California. It was the weekend where it was a great weekend to be Spanish. There's a lot to go through. I think before we start, Tiff, hello today, by the way. You're looking very glamorous today, very suntan. Before we start today, we spoke offline. You've had quite a few people come up to you recently and saying how much they enjoy the podcast, as have I. Twitter seems to have a number of people saying that as well. So thank you to all of you. We are going to invest some money in some decent audio. You'll be delighted to hear. We might have a sponsor, so we'll watch this space, which will certainly help things, because we just do this for fun and to bring you a dose of motorsport from all over the world, really. So because he's a guru and he's an oracle and he's so passionate about it,
and to remind you to tell all your friends also that Love On The Road is on Amazon Prime. Also, we use this podcast to keep on telling us. Well, I keep on meeting people that say, well, you're not on telly anymore, are you? No. That's all I am aware. Well, it's called On The Road. It's on Prime. They go, oh, well, I'll look into that. It's so hard in this day and age, despite all social media, to spread the word, isn't it? It's, you know, you hope that other people will spread the word for you, because you can't afford to advertise, you know, and so anyway, so hopefully Prime's picking us up and we'll move back forwards again into the spotlight of the world.
Okay, let's move forwards to Down Under, to Australia, where my cousins were. My nephews were there supporting Lewis, actually. They were supporting Lewis Hamilton, who didn't have the best of weekends. But it was an amazing weekend. Yeah, he was.
Was Lewis even there?
Yeah, he did turn up, apparently.
I wrote my Grand Prix stories. I suddenly remembered. What about Lewis? Because, yeah, it was all Viva España. We started off this amazing weekend for Spanish wins, which we'll come to as we go from championship to championship to championship. And we had King Carlos III. I'm named in that because I think there was a real King Carlos in Spain until recently. Indeed. And then, of course, his father is King Carlos II. So having King Carlos II wins the Dakar, and now his son wins this emotional Grand Prix after 2 weeks after the appendicitis operation and a couple of months after getting sacked by Ferrari. So it was a very emotional weekend. And he just drove a brilliant race after, what's that bloke called? Max. Oh, yes.
I'm not going to be smug because he is an absolute masterclass of a talent. Like him or not, I'm not a fan of Red Bull because of the situation that's been going on for many years. But what a brilliant thing for the sport. No disrespect to Max, because he's brilliant. He's a phenomenal driver. But it was brilliant to see him go out just to open it up for everybody else and have a proper race.
But there was talk that Carlos had better race pace anyway. So in fact, it might have been a fantastic Grand Prix rather than just the burning rear wheel.
Do you believe that all of a sudden... Carlos has better race pace. Okay, so...
The Ferraris have been getting better and better, you know. It's a shame that Leclerc obviously mucked up his qualifying. Things didn't go quite right in Q3. It's funny, actually. Every time the Ferraris have to get a sniff of victory, it's Carlos is the one at the front, whereas when the things are going badly and Max is winning all the time, it tends to be Leclerc that's the chaser. So it was quite an ironic twist. I don't think Leclerc was too happy, probably. Benoit, Ferrari 1-2. And yeah, Max breaking down.
But then I think that's the 85th Ferrari 1-2 of all time, which is quite phenomenal, their history in Formula 1.
Amazing. But of course, it should have been Checo's day. And this is why he cannot stay next year. Yes, they haven't announced he's going, but I mean, that performance. I mean, he did qualify third, but he was 0.359 slower than Max. You know, that's massive in Formula 1 terms. And then, of course, he got dumped down to six because he impeded Hülkenberg in Q1. So his day got worse. You know, he started sixth and finished fifth. He didn't move up at all and with a superior car. So not a good day for Checo.
Could we see Carlos Sainz in the Red Bull next year? Because Checo's car, he cannot stay. Surely he cannot stay.
We can't believe it, can we? I mean, you know, it's just weird, yeah, mate. I don't know. I think Carlos would want to go there. I think Carlos would like to go to Mercedes, maybe.
Well, hang on, whoa, 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 Lewis's place. Carlos wouldn't want to go with the best car, the car that's won every race other than one that he won for goodness knows how long. Of course he would like to go there. Anyone's going to like to go there.
I don't know, I just don't see it as a match, but you could be right. Could be right, you know, experienced driver with Max. So anyway, that was all up front. But the McLaren had a great weekend, you know, apart from poor old Piastri, the Australian home time. Because Lando, it's a great battle with those two. I mean, they're so, so close. You know, each weekend one has a slight advantage over the other. And of course, because Lando was the quicker and had the was the leading McLaren, and obviously a different strategy, poor old Piastri to let him by, which he had to do because as Lando was coming faster, he pitted later with the tyres. And the Australian crowd was a bit disappointed with that. But I mean, tremendous for them to finish, you know, third and fourth. And then what we had the sort of everybody else going on there. I mean, it wasn't that an exciting race. I think we all enjoyed the Carlos thing, Sainz winning after the appendicitis. But it was another pretty processional race, to be fair. It was sort of 5 out of 10. Not the greatest track for overtaking again. But we just had the excitement around the end with this George catching Fernando, the wily old fox. And all of a sudden, we all saw George halfway up. So it was a huge, because we weren't watching the dice when it happened. Did we suddenly cut to a shot of George sort of, you know, on his side? He's been on the Twitter this morning on YouTube. He was well panicking. I don't know if you've seen
him
on YouTube. It's red flag, red flag, red, red flag, red, red flag. I mean, understandably, because he had no vision of anything coming towards him at all because the car was that angle. So it's a pretty scary a position to be in, so you can fully understand. And then even, because at the time I thought, well, what happened there? You know, well, whoa. And I thought, hold on a minute. Alonso suddenly seemed to be very slow and then went again. And actually before the end of the race, it made me think of, that was just like a good old-fashioned brake test that we've all done in Formula Ford. It's a nasty, dirty little trick. But of course, when you're watching national racing, you can't, there's no proof for Marshall. It's always your word against the bloke in front of you, and they've suddenly tapped the brakes just as you're on full throttle. And so you have to suddenly bail out at the moment. And I've had many a moment when someone's done it to me. But nowadays, it's always telemetry on board. They can read everything that's happened. And of course, true enough, you know, Fernando had done something very unusual, suddenly slowed at the apex and was given his 20-second penalty, which he wasn't happy with. But I think that was the right decision.
The internet are up in arms. Well, half the internet are up in arms saying it shouldn't happen, and the other half saying it should happen. It should happen because you can't do that. You can't do a brake test. Right. It's if in any racing, if somebody misses a gear, you're so close. In lots of our racing, club racing, you're so close. If somebody misses a gear, even that's it. You're up the back of them. Right. So if they brake test you, there's nowhere to go, and there's the radiator gone.
It did show how, despite everyone crowing in Formula One about their wonderful regulations, it did also show how you can't follow that close because, of course, he wasn't in Fernando's gearbox like in Formula Ford. You know, you're 2 inches from the gearbox and the bloke taps the brakes in the middle of a corner. And then, gearbox, bloody hell. You know, it's only because he went into that dreaded sort of half a car length that all of a sudden he lost his front aero and then the back aero and the whole thing went pear-shaped. But
it's unusual. It was really unusual, I thought, that George actually lost it completely that badly because
I know.
It was a bit of a panic, I think. He was a bit like, oh, I didn't expect him to break that hard. But I don't know. It'd be interesting. I don't think you'll see a Max or a Lewis do that under the same circumstances.
I mean, it wasn't that big a, you know, not that big a shunt. He ended up looking terrible. It was just as the two left-hand wheels got taken off and then he was sitting on top of them with their straps. I doubt the monocoque was damaged. So that was the main drama. No Australian joy with Ricciardo either. Yuki's really getting on top of him. And, of course, Helmut Marko comes out and says, you know, well, they're both a bit average and Yuki, you're useless in racing. They don't race well enough. And he came to the right old seeing to. And Yuki had a really good weekend. I mean, into the top 10 in qualifying, while poor old Daniel didn't even get out of Q3, ended up right at the back. And Yuki raced to seventh by the time the results had all been sorted out with penalties and stuff. So great day for Yuki, very bad for Ricciardo. So no Aussie joy. And then, of course, yes, I broke my notes and apparently Lewis Hamilton was there. He qualified.
He's having a shocker, isn't he?
But to be fair, I mean, it shows how tight it is in Formula One. To get into Q3 three, George was 10th and Lewis was 11th, same cars. And Lewis was only 0.059 of a second, so only 600th slower than George. So it was pretty close. But of course, the big headline was, you know, out of Q1. Well, I think George got up to 7th in the end. So the Mercedes was not a good car all weekend.
Out of Q2
into Q3, that final 10. And then, of course, we had this bizarre thing on the grid when they're going down all the tyre lists and Lewis is on softs. Nobody else was. And then we had the radio communication. Well, hey, mate, I don't think I'm on the right tyres. Why am I on softs? It's not the right tyre. Well, as Martin pointed out, they would have had plenty of pre-race meetings. The decision wouldn't have been just the teams. They didn't sort of, just before the car got on the grid, stick softs on his tyre. They obviously would have discussed it. It was always the wrong tyre. And then I kept on wondering, he was having such a miserable time that maybe it's a little switch under the seat that he just sort of switched the engine off. Happened some true stories at Le Mans. The Le Mans of people in cars falling apart that were very dangerous, and of drivers quietly dipping a clutch, going down the Mulsanne straight and revving the engine to pieces, which, of course, you can't do in a modern car because there's too many computers stopping you damaging your engine. But
is that right? People used to do that back
then? Yeah,
that
happens. Yeah, people have literally just dipped the clutch and just blown the engine because they didn't want to go anymore. They were way out of the race. And why slog around in a car that was dangerous?
You're not referring to yourself. You would never,
I would know. I'm a man that wants to finish every race.
Yeah, I know you are.
We have more and more crazy stuff with the Saubers. I call them Saubers now because I kept on getting the name wrong, didn't I? The clicks or the hits. They're different name on their
what
hits.
What was all
and
that about, the steak? What was all that about with the pit stops? Because they kept cross-threading the nuts or the single thread.
And then they took it. There was one picture I saw where they all seemed to be standing looking at the car. I didn't know they got a pit penalty. The mechanics are taking spare wheel nuts out now in case the first one cross threads. And apparently, when they dropped one that rolled across the pit, they got a £10 million fine for that. I mean, they're having a miserable time. But to be honest, that colour's not that good. I thought when I saw photos when the car was launched, it would look quite good on track. But I think it's almost too
It's green. Too green.
It's fluorescent green, isn't it? Sort of, it stands out, but not for the right reasons.
Too green, you're right. I'm not a Bottas fan, you know that. I don't think Bottas should still be there. But the video that he did, the advertising he did for Uber car share or something, absolutely class. That was fair play.
It was brilliant.
Brilliant character. Well, I don't think he's a brilliant character. He was in that video. But I still don't think he should be in Formula One. But that was a fantastic video.
Yeah. Spanish victory in the Formula One and a great story. And a bit of a drama at the back and Alonso involved. But there was no Spanish win in the Formula 2. They didn't win everything this weekend, but we'll get later.
almost, they pretty much
did. But instead, it was a Red Bull victory. More controversy, really. The Red Bull protégé, the French guy, Isaac Hadjar, on the track, won both the reverse grid sprint and the feature race. But he won both. One got lost and one he won by a bit of luck, to be honest. But off the line for the sprint race, the reverse grid race, he was in third and the pole man made a bit of a bad start. So he's moved a bit to the right. I'm going to go inside him. Meanwhile, the guy second on the grid made a bad start and the fourth place driver, which I've got his name down there somewhere because I'm going to find it somewhere, Pepe Marti, who's actually Isaac's teammate, he moves a bit left to overtake the car that's slower in front of him. And it was a complete racing accident, absolutely 100%. But the flipping stewards got a hold of it and they decided that Isaac was more to blame than anyone else. I mean, it's just in a flash of a moment, the car ahead of you is a bit slower than you. I mean, you can't always mirror signal indicate when you're flying off a grid. And, you know, a lot of the times you just take a deep breath and make the move and hope that, you know, there isn't any touch. But he did touch his teammate. His teammate went into the guy that was second on the grid and they both went off and crashed. But it reminded me when I got really angry. When Magnus, you remember that Magnus in Brazil? Because I really had a go at it. Because he was in the middle of the road going down to turn one. Had nobody pushing him at all. And suddenly decided to move right to take the racing line into turn one. And wiped out Albon, who was there. And that got no penalty at all. Wasn't even questioned. And so they've got to be consistent. And I think Hadjar losing that race was an outrage. And that was if there was a racing incident, They always say at turn one that allow racing incidents. You know, we all know things happen when everything's close. So Hadjar had his sprint race taken away from him, which was benefited by the Czech, Roman Stanek, had a win. But in the main race, he got really lucky because he was running about eighth. He only qualified seventh or eighth, Hadjar. But then they had a safety car. And under virtue, he happened to be in the pits. I think they're not allowed. I think they do close the pits now for full safety cars for Formula 2 and Formula 3. I'm not sure about that. Anyway, he happened to be in the pits doing his tyre change, where everybody else had done them during the green flag laps. And so he came out in front from eighth or something and cruised to win. And that annoys me when virtual safety cars give someone a victory, even though he deserved one. But in general, Formula 2 and Formula 3, it was pretty chaotic down there. It's a pretty lively action in both Formula 2 and Formula 3. Massive racing, 3-1s, very entertaining to watch. But this qualifying is such a lottery now because they have so many yellow flags and so many red flags. And you only get like two laps on your new tyres. You get two sets, you know, and they're like Formula 1 at the end of the Formula 2 qualifying. They're all coming out one after the other and they're all backing up, making a space.
Especially on the street circuits.
Yeah, and so if you get a yellow flag, you have to back off. And if you get a red flag, you back off. But if that's three-quarters of the way around your lap on your set of tyres, you know, you're going to be down because it's so close, you know, so it's fractions of a second. And Ollie Bearman, fresh from finishing seventh in a Grand Prix and a complete hero of Saudi, he ended up qualifying 16th because he literally came out the last corner when it went red, full course yellow. And so that lap didn't count, and his other laps were a bit of a mess. He had an engine problem. He ended up finishing 14th in race one and 10th in race two. Kimi Antonelli, the Italian kid that's his big bugbear this season, he qualified second, but he spun out the first race, and then he finished fourth in the feature race. But who won? There was a bit of joy in who won the second race? Who won the main race? Was right. Of course, Isaac won it, yeah. The virtual safety car helped him out. So all a bit of a lottery in Formula 2. Formula 3, similarly, chaos everywhere.
There's nobody in Formula 2 that's really standing out. We thought there'd be a bit of a standout.
Yeah, but, exactly, yeah. We thought Antonin Beyerman would be there. And Martin, the French guy, is quite aggressive. He had to start at the back of the grid for both races for some reason, I can't remember. But it was all a bit of a lottery. Very entertaining, as was Formula 3. Where the Briton Luke Browning, who led the championship coming into the championship this season, coming into Australia, he managed to hold on to his championship lead by equal points because he retired from the first race with engine troubles or some sort of technical failure and finished fourth in the main event. So Luke's still up there. Norwegian won. This different nation. Martinus Stensholm won the reserve grid race, holding off Arvid Lindblad. The British driver had a good run. He had finished second in that, and I think he did 11th in the feature race. And the main race was run by the Swedish-Bosnian driver, Dino Boganovic. So reasonable. Luke Browning holds on to his championship lead. Ollie Bearman, yet again, gets nil point. What's up, Ollie?
Nil point. It's also supercars as well.
Yeah, I've got the show, four races. I mean, the entertainment they have in Aussie. I think on the Friday and the Saturday, we're having races at 7 p.m. You know, instead of having more and more pop concerts that seem to be the popular way of, you know, finish your motorsport on the track at 4 o'clock and then have pop. No, they're racing in Australia and Red Arrows. You have four supercar races, three Porsche races, as well as two Formula 2, two Formula 3, and a Grand Prix. So loads of racing. But yet again, this Chevrolet Camaro versus Mustang battle was the Chevys took all the spoils. This 888 racing team, Red Bull again, they won Formula 2. They also won three out of the four races. In fact, the first race, they finished first and second with Brock Feeney ahead of Will Brown, their two drivers, the Red Bull boys. The second race, they're first and fifth. Third race, they're first and second. But in the fourth race, it was Nick Percat came through. Still a Chevrolet, I'm afraid, for Ford fans, to have his first win, 35 years old now. First win in 4 years. He broke a 118 race drought. He was a Bathurst winner when he was a youngster all those years ago. So a great win for him. But they didn't have it all their own way, the Red Bull boys, because there's plenty of clashing in front of them. There was races they were hit. There was entertaining, wall-banging supercars. So their results looked pretty depressingly Red Bull 888 team. There were others in with a good shout until they clouted each other or the walls. So yeah, great entertainment for the supercars. And then we returned from Australia. So from down under at the early hours of the morning in Europe, over to Portugal and the Algarve, the most wonderful circuit for the MotoGP, where the Spanish Armada won everything. They had a clean sheet of all the races. The sprint race wasn't won by Jorge Martin, who tends to win most sprint races, and wasn't won by Ducati either. But it was run by the Spaniard Maverick Vinales and Aprilia. So that was good for Aprilia. Good racing. And then it was actually 1-2-3 in the sprint race because Marc Marquez was second, making his return on this Ducati, and Jorge Martin was third. So Spanish 1-2-3 on the podium for the sprint race. And then the Grand Prix was fantastic entertainment. I mean, it's so good round there anyway.
I think it's one of the best ever. Oh, yeah.
I mean, so who was out from it? Well, it was dominated by Jorge Martin. So the Spaniard went out and won. He seems to be the man on form. He's still in this satellite Ducati, the Pramac Ducati, not a factory bike. They're all pretty much the same. He disappeared into the distance, but everyone's eyes were on Pedro Acosta. And he was the whole star. Forget Carlos Sainz, forget anybody else. This weekend, Pedro was the main hero.
He's still only 19, isn't he? No. Is he only 19?
Yeah, I think he's still 19. He might have just turned 20. I don't have to check.
I'll have a look.
But we've raved about him because we followed MotoGP all the last 3 years, you know, and he won the GP Moto3 and then the Moto2 championship. Wonderful character. He used to have his great big teeth smiling with their wire across the front of them and quoting. But he had this amazing, he qualified seventh. So first he had to sort out the factory KTM riders. He's on a satellite bike. This was last year's bike. And he had to sort out the factory boy Jack Miller and Brad Binder, both really quick riders. They sorted them out. Then he goes and catches up the world champion, number one, Francesco Bagnaia, on his factory Ducati, who was running a fairly solid fourth and not really in with a shout. And he just followed him for a few days. He made a few dives up the inside and eventually went past Bagnaia to head off to fourth place. Wonderful overtaking manoeuvre. Meanwhile, Marc Marquez, then, who was following behind Acosta, he then decides to attack Bagnaia, does a dive down at the turn five hairpin, the really tight left-handed hairpin, did the job, ran a bit wide, but then Bagnaia does a cut back, gets on the throttle, but runs wide and takes them both out, wipes out Marquez and himself. Plenty of drama. And apparently Bagnaia was cross at the end. He was blamed, but it looked very blatant to me and the commentators. Meanwhile, up front, Acosta is going to be amazing fourth place in his second Grand Prix when poor old Vinales, his Aprilia, breaks down. And something happened in the gearbox, they think, and he's just coming up the turn one and he decides to let the clutch back in to see if it will still work. And the rear wheel locked and spat him over the handlebars. Two laps before, he was running second, a really good second. So who comes third? Pedro Acosta. And there he is on the podium. And he's, I mean, just amazing. Unfortunately, he's all Spanish.
He is only 19. He's 20, May the 25th this year. Oh. So he's still only 19.
What a talent. The commentators, commentators just didn't know what other superlative to use. The way he rides differently, the way he overtakes cleanly. Unfortunately, for the Spaniards, this rotten Italian, Enea Bastianini, who's Bagnaia's teammate of the factory Ducati's, finished second. So they didn't fill the podium.
It used to be Italian-Spanish, a bit of everything, but the Italians are sort of dipping out. The Spanish are dominating on two wheels now.
Well, Acosta's going to be dominating for many years. But the Spanish tears of joy continued in Moto2, the most emotional scenes in Moto2 for many a year. Sadly, Jake Dixon, the only British rider in Moto2, still not fit to race. He did qualify. I think he went out to the practice, but he's still not quite getting over a huge high side he had in the last round. But the star was Aaron Canet. And Canet's this aggressive rider that's in his fourth year of Moto2. And he's had 20 podiums, 15 second places out of his 75 races, and 20 podiums. He won quite a few races in Moto3. He's got tattoos. He's tattooed up to his jawline, all around his body. It's often felt that, you know, he's been overseen by the MotoGP teams because of, you know, his looks don't suit the PR of MotoGP teams and Well, the fact that he hadn't won a Moto2 race probably didn't exactly help him get a MotoGP ride. Anyway, he rode another brilliant ride. Someone was out front, forgot the name of the story, dropped it. So there was a leader that dropped it, helped him take the lead. But he came out, well, you know Aragon, this amazing right-hand corner, super fast, downhill, isn't it? Long, long right before you hit that long, long straight. So Canet, on the last lap, puts his left leg up there, takes it off the peg. But apparently he does a lot, he's quite small, so apparently he does a lot of cornering with his left foot, not on the peg, as other riders do. So he raised it up in the air. Then he took one hand off the front to put number one, still in the corner, about 140 miles an hour. So it was a wonder. Everybody wanted Aaron Canet to win. And it was a great, great story. Well, I've forgotten who was second or third. I'm not sure the Spanish filled that podium. Have I written it down? I didn't check it out. He may have been all Spanish again. I can't remember second or third because we were all just wanting Canet to win. Yeah. An American was second. There was an American that came second, so it certainly wasn't all Moto3. But Moto3, we do have our only two British riders in the entire three grids of Moto racing. Scott Ogden qualified a brilliant ninth. Josh Whatley 22nd, but Scott again had a bad first lap. He doesn't do well on the first laps. I don't know how the psychologist and what they're going to do to help him out. He dropped to 15th. He bounced back up to 11th and 12th and then ended up 15th, whereas Josh Whatley finished 19th, only four places behind. But it was a shame, Scott. I don't know, the talent's there. We've seen him in the rain. He finished one of the Grand Prix in Argentina or Chile or South America, finished on the podium. Amazingly quick in the rain. He's led races in the rain. But yeah, just aggression, maybe not there for the racing. But it was a 1-2-3 for España this time. All the span on the top of the podium, the flag was there. What do we call it? Yellow and orange, the flag. That's what yellow and orange. Red and yellow. Yeah. I don't know what the Spanish call it. I'd call it
red and yellow.
Red and yellow, not orange and yellow. Yeah. Red and yellow. But Daniel Holgado led a Spanish 1-2-3. So, España.
Viva España.
Stay on the motorbikes and we go to Spain, where we almost didn't have a Spanish win. It would have been the only place not having a Spanish win. The Superbike boys were there. And again, sensational racing. I mean, I'm sorry, these two-wheelers just do entertain. Because Toprak Razgatlioglu, our favourite Turkish rider, he switched to BMW this season. BMW haven't won a full Grand Prix since 2013. And they've hired lots of Scott Rennie, of course, our really talented British rider, just doesn't seem to be able to make the BMW work. But Toprak can. And the race won. He was quite a long way behind in second place. And he tracked down the leader, the factory Ducati boy, Bulega, Nicola, and overtook him on the last lap to take BMW's first win since all those years. They won a sprint race, I think, in 2021, I've written down. But as far as I can find out, the last time they ran a full superbike race was in 2013. So huge emotion, the BMW garage. And then in race two, it was even more exciting because he took the lead at the last corner off of Bautista, of course, the Italian champion. Amazing lunging dive on the last bend of the last lap. But the Ducati boys sorted him out, I'm afraid, in the last straight. And Spain finally had its winner as Bautista led home a Ducati 1-2. So they had one win in Spain, not quite as successful as Portugal. But great entertainment on the telly, great commentary.
It always is.
MotoGP commentators, I think, are the best commentators of any pairings anywhere. Just the right level of excitement and raising the voice and lowering the tone and information and technical backup and knowledge.
And then we're a bit biased because then Susie Perry. So Tiff, in terms of the analogy bikes versus cars, so if MotoGP was Formula One, the equivalent, so World Tour bikes would be like IndyCar? Is that an analogy?
Yeah, they're a sideways step. Well, they're production-based and sort of production-based bikes. So they're not racing machines. It's more like GT3, I suppose, or, you know, because even sports cars are prototypes now, aren't they? So perhaps more like GT3. But really quick bikes. And this Toprak, I mean, he needs to get on a MotoGP, but they're pretty funny. He's no good on a MotoGP, a different style of riding, who knows? But he was certainly the star in Barcelona. And then we go all the way across. We've been from Australia in the English mornings in the middle of the night, and then motorbikes in the middle of the day. And we wait for the evening to see all the American motorsport, but IndyCar and NASCAR. And in IndyCar, the Spaniards ruled away.
It's again, funny. It's amazing. I watched quite a lot of the IndyCar last night. I've been to Thermal. Yeah. Have you been there? I know you were there a couple of weeks ago.
I've never looked at the track. I was there for the tennis. Didn't go to the track.
It's a funny track. I mean, there's no garages or anything like that. There are garages, but not on the pit lane or anything like that. Yeah. It's a funny track. It's a members club, really.
Well, it's like the one in Spain, isn't it?
Ascari,
yeah, because Ascari's got no grandstands. You know, Ascari's just a wild... But a bit like Ascari, you know, these designers come along and they over-design the circuit. I mean, it was amazing. I watched all the warm-ups, you know, and it was great to watch these IndyCar drivers. You know, the onboards are amazing. I just love an onboard IndyCar because you can hear the engine when it gets a bit of a wheel spin. Then you see the corrections going on, and they leap the curb. They were taking four wheels in the air through a very fast chicane. So it was great to watch the drivers doing the driving. It was, you know, reminded me because I watched it was Leclerc being caught by someone in the Grand Prix, and he's just turning into the corner, out of the corner, and turns into the next corner. It doesn't look like he's anywhere near the limit. Because, of course, they're driving with cars set up mainly on understeer, and they can't push too hard because then they know the tires will overheat. So they never look like they're driving fast and on board of a Grand Prix car. And we know they are, you know, because they're struggling for every tenth of a second. So the precision. And yet the cars, they can't really wring them by the necks by the look of it. That's why you see motorbike racing. You know, you can see them twitching, the rider on top of the machine.
You're
and the
right.
Going out, stepping out, and the frontal fold. Yeah, I know. But you watch a Formula One car on board and you just say, well, what? I can do that. Well, I could. Well, of course, I could. You know.
But then yesterday with the IndyCar, a lot of the time, everybody was probably thinking the same thing. I could do that because they were coasting and they was just driving around.
Yeah, well, that's because the format of the race, it didn't work. Yeah. It was a brilliant experiment. So it's a great experiment. They go to this rich man's haven and they come up with this million dollar prize fund. You know, Alex Palou, the Spaniard, went off with $500,000 as his prize. But they obviously looked at the track, but then I looked at it straight away. Well, nobody can overtake, you know. This design has come along and designed every type of different corner, which is great if you're the driver. In a bit like the Nürburgring, it's great if you're the driver, but when you try to overtake someone, there's nowhere to overtake. And so that wasn't going to work. Then they came up with this idea of, you know, 10-minute heats were quite fun. Well, you know, until Dixon whacked Grosjean up the backside of the first start.
Grosjean first corner,
And took out the poor old Dutch kid. I forget his name now. Gone from my head. And from the rest, it was pretty much a process. There were some great battling. There were some noses coming up the inside. It was quite a bit of aggressive driving going, especially the second heat when it was the final when Callum Ilott, the star for Britain, was Callum Ilott, who's a stand-in driver for the Malukas, who's injured from a go-kart or a training accident. And in fact, in the final, he led the two Arrow McLaren teammates. So he was ahead of Pato O'Ward and Alexander Rossi. Really battling, but I think in the end he thought maybe he's getting into trouble, and he's proved his point. You know, he can if you get him in a good car, he's there. And whether he'll get back into IndyCar because he was dropped last year for Romain Grosjean took his seat, kicked Ilott out, but of course Ilott's now racing a Porsche 963 in the World Endurance Championship. But I'd like to see Ilott get back because he's a real talent. Yeah. But now the tyre wear was bad, but it wasn't as bad in the race as they thought it was going to be. I think when the track was green, was new, it was ripping the tyres apart. But I think by the time the final, the rubber was laid down. But it was just such a single line track for 95% of the track, you know. And so then nobody was going to overtake nobody. So who knows what they'll try next year. It was a bit of fun. It was a bit like, you know, NASCAR went to that Coliseum with a ridiculous quarter mile track and banged into each other. And it was sort of the opening of the season, not championship round, like this race. So,
for those of you that don't know, they tried this new format and they did a couple of different heats. They drew people at random, so you didn't know which heat you were going to be in, and then the top five went through. And then, so it, on paper, it sounded really good, but it was a bit too sort of club racery, I think. But anyway, it was like you said, a bit of fun trying something new out.
And it was still good just to watch an IndyCar being driven.
It's brilliant. And I love those 360 cameras they've got where it follows them around and you see how close they are. Yeah. And like you said, when you see the driver working so hard around the corners and get a snap of oversteer, rabbit, and yeah, and the noise as well. Really
yeah,
good.
you can hear it. So entertaining, but not really entertaining. We've got another 5 out of 10 for that. 5 out of 10 for the Australian Grand Prix. 10 out of 10 for MotoGP. 10 out of 10 for Superbike. Five out of 10 for IndyCar. And then we went off to the last of the day as my eyes were dropping off and I needed another glass of something to keep me awake. We had the NASCAR around COTA. It's never a particularly good race around this, 4 mile Grand Prix track. Because they don't have the full course yellows, which is so common in NASCAR, which bunches them all back up again. But you still have, 39 cars, you know, leaping over curbs. So they don't care about track limits. And it's still entertaining in a way, but the race wasn't that entertaining. There's plenty of banging and barging down in the midfield. And the only chance of a Spanish win, well, there wasn't really a chance of a Spanish win, I'm afraid, our last of our global tour. Only Daniel Suarez, the Mexican, who speaks Spanish. I mean, he could have saved Spain's day, but he didn't. He finished 32nd. So William Byron came out top in the end. He was one of the quickest all weekend in his Chevrolet. It's sort of, you know, if you're there, it's about 5 out of 10, probably. If you're there watching loads of NASCARs bouncing around, it's entertaining. But the actual racing up front wasn't that exciting again. So finally,
I think for me, NASCARs, The ovals are the best for NASCAR. Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. You know, see them go fast. Yes,
there's a race, there's a race every weekend. There's a race every weekend. Exactly. You know, so if you have a boring one, you might have a good one. But finally, we come home. The only racing at home, well, rallying it was. It's great to see this newly sponsored by ProBike, British Rally Championship. We need our rallying to be revitalised, and this seems to be a championship that's getting everybody together and these sort of R5, the Formula 2 cars of the rally world. And it was quite a good result. It was up in Lancashire, in the wind and the rain. And it was won by an Englishman, Chris Ingraman, who we've mentioned before, does quite well in the World Rally Championship in the R5 WRC2 category. He was driving his Volkswagen Polo. It's good. We had different nationalities, different cars that filled the podium. So the Englishman, Chris Ingram, his Polo is first. The Northern Ireland boy, William Crichton, was second in his Ford Fiesta. And the Welshman, Miren Evans, was third in a Toyota Yaris. And this is great. Three different cars. You can buy these cars. I think they're still, you know, I mean, I say cheap, you know. I think about 200 grand or something. But I remember one of the rich British guys, when they had World Rally cars, and he just had to give up rally, even though he's very wealthy. Oh, I wish I could remember the name. Names go. Because his car was like a £2 million rally car. And the trouble is in the rallying, I mean, bending them is one thing, but if it catches fire in the middle of a forest, you're going to have nothing. You're going to have £2 million worth of ashes. And he couldn't get it insured. You know, motorsport insurance is very expensive. You can do it, you know, but for the £2 million. So he gave up in the end. So hopefully this is a more cost-effective formula now, and it's growing on the national championship. More manufacturers are building the cars. As I said, you know, we had a Volkswagen Beetle Fiesta, the Yaris. So let's hope that kicks off and grows bigger and bigger.
I've got a mate that's, Rob Barnett, he's from VBox Race Logic. He does some British rallying. I must look at what he does. I think he's some sort of champion, but it's more club level. But I'll look at what he does as well.
Wonderful. So that was an exhausting weekend where Spain.
It was indeed.
Spanish flags flew in Australia, Spain, Portugal, and America in all sorts of categories. And
what's coming up next weekend. Week?
Yeah, quieter this weekend, as always happens. You always have too much one weekend and too little the next. The World Rally Boys are out in Kenya. It's not quite the rally it was, the safari rally of old, because it's more little sections, but it's still a tough, tough rally. So we'll see what happens out there. Then we just got NASCAR go back on their ovals, a 3/4 mile, strange D-shaped Richmond oval, which should be interesting. But mainly to Britain, the British GT, the British motorsport. There have been some club races already the last couple of weekends, but the first big event of the British calendar, British GTs, up to Alton Park. They got a round on Saturday and on Easter Monday. So you can go to two rounds or pick round or both rounds or whatever you want. And that's just brilliant at the moment. You know, you've got every McLaren's and Lamborghinis and Ferraris, and I'm not sure any Ferraris in the British Championship, Mercedes, and just brilliant. And it's pro am, you know, you've always got an amateur driving. So
hopefully,
yeah.
DK Engineering will come back bigger and stronger this year.
No, he's not, he's doing the World Championship.
Oh, he's not doing
DK,
it. Oh, is he?
Yeah, World Championship. But of course, we've got the Aston Martin girl, she's out on an Aston. Oh, names
not
and
Jess,
me.
Not Jess.
Jessie, Jess Hawkins, yeah, Jess. She's running an Aston Martin, so that'll be a bit of a baptism of fire for her, because she's the most is pro-am, but I think there is an am-am category class that she's in, but she will have to qualify. They always qualify pros all in track at one time and ams in the other. So Jess is going to be out in the pro field, so her lap time is going to be probably not that high up, but it's baptism of fire for her.
Well,
so good luck to Jess.
She's a phenomenal driver, and she's a brilliant ambassador as well. We're big fans of hers, but it will be interesting to see how the times go, because people perhaps don't understand that the people on Twitter and when they say, "Oh, she should have a drive in Aston Martin Formula One car," it's about, you know, you've got to balance things up a little bit here. But she's a phenomenal driver. I look forward to following her racing this year. So that's good. Penny coming up. Brilliant week. This brilliant weekend just gone. Thanks for joining as always. Hopefully we may have, as I said, we might have a sponsor, but if you know anyone that wants to just bung us a few quid, we'll get
microphones,
microphones and stuff. Exactly. But thanks for joining
Easter,
as always. Everyone.
Happy Easter, of course. Have a good weekend. Get your Easter eggs out.
If you celebrate Easter, happy Ramadan, happy whatever it is, wherever you're from. You're going to be all very PC these days, Tim. Thanks for joining. Cheers.